Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, February the 2nd, 2016. I currently have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Invocation tonight will be given by Councilmember Reese, and then our pledge will be given by one of our scouts, Preston Daly.
Heavenly Father, we are so grateful for the opportunity to meet together tonight as residents of this wonderful community. We ask for thy blessing upon this meeting this evening that we will be able to discuss the city issues with respect and civility. We ask thee to bless our community that we can continue to do those things which make it such a wonderful place to live. And these things we pray for in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen.
Thank you. Preston?
Will the audience please stand? You salute the flag and repeat the pledge of allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Preston, thank you. That was an awesome job. We always enjoy it when our scouts help us out with the pledge. Okay, next item is the approval of the meeting's agenda. If someone would like to make a motion or amend, I'll take that now.
I move that we amend the agenda to place item number 9 before item number 8.
I have a motion to move number 9 to the beginning of scheduled items. Is there a second?
I second it.
Mr. Geddes seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments, and I picked up the sheets where people could sign up for public comments if there was someone who wanted to sign up, but I picked it up before you had an opportunity. We'll give you an opportunity to speak for sure. So I'm going to go down the list, and then you tell me if you would like to speak right now during public comments or if you would like to speak on a specific item. Mr. Cromar, you want to speak now or on a specific item?
No.
Okay. Very good. Mr. Hansen?
Now would be fine.
Now would be fine. Okay. I see Mrs. Wright, you want to speak on item number 9?
Yes,
Mrs. Hagan? Now? Mark Allen, you want to speak on item number 9? Mr. Hagan, you want to speak on item number 9 or now?
Number 9.
Number 9. Okay. Did I miss anybody? Tell me your name, please.
Jason.
Jason? Jason. Jason, spell your last name.
G-O-A-T-E-S.
I can't hear you.
G-O-A-T-E-S.
G-O-A-T-E-S. Thank you. Mr. Goetsch, do you want to speak now or during?
Number 9.
Okay. Great. So, we're going to start with Mr. Cromar. If you can give us
Mr. Mayor, point of order.
Yes.
It is city code that all video cameras must be placed at the rear of the room. Can I ask that we follow our city code?
It is. I had asked Mr. Cromar to move his camera back where the rest of the cameras were, and he moved it closer as opposed to moving it farther away. Would you mind moving your camera?
I do.
Yes, you will, or no, you will not?
I do mind. We've had this discussion many times. Visiting television reporters have explained, and I've explained, that when someone is speaking here, they cannot be seen from behind, and hence out of the way. There's a good 15 feet there, and state code says, just so long as there's no encumbrance, therefore, I do mind, and I will stay there. Thank you.
We will take this up then.
Mayor? I do not like violating city code.
I don't either.
And I believe our residents should follow our city code unless and until that code is amended.
So, Mr. Cromar, you're interrupting our meeting, and I would ask kindly that you do not, and I would also ask kindly that you move your camera back. So let's proceed with your public comments and go from there.
All right. Okay. Pardon me. My name is Ken Cromar, Cedar Hills, 9870 North Meadow Drive. I'm reading from a letter that was addressed to the mayor, or excuse me, to David Shaw, the city attorney, from January 29th. And it's under the title, Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government Reiterates Request for Litigation Hold to Protect All Cedar Hill City Government Records from Further Destruction Until Possible Legal Action Can Be Considered. I'll skip past the introduction and read from the third paragraph, where it says, despite Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government's best effort in recent years to obtain and preserve certain public records via GRAMA request, Mayor Gary Gygi's recent Facebook Cedar Hill's chat room acknowledgement of his failed attempt, innocently or intentionally, to destroy public records and his ignorance of state law has served to highlight this important fact. In all caps, we have no reason to believe that we have always received all public documents we were legally and lawfully entitled to via GRAMA requests. Next paragraph, we have come to this realization because of Mr. Gygi's acknowledgement, as noted above, coupled with consideration of the following facts. Number one, Gary Gygi chose to personally fulfill a recent GRAMA request for his public records rather than the state certified records officer for Cedar Hills and city recorder Colleen Mulvey at least once, possibly multiple times. Number two, Gary Gygi altered photos for a GRAMA request that revealed his campaign materials and yard signs and personal business in a city building. Number three, city recorder Colleen Mulvey recent acknowledgement of not knowing where the server is located and hence inability to guarantee its security or protect its access. Then there's a link. Number four, city recorder Mulvey has not been fully or regularly obtaining, securing, and preserving, backing up, and protecting the public record. Number five, Gary Gygi and former city attorney Eric Johnson publicly debated and disagreed as to even what a public record was in the presence of the state record ombudsman. There's audio that's supplied. Number six, former city attorney Eric Johnson admitted that Cedar Hills could not completely fulfill our 2012 GRAMA request because then city council member Jim Perry, Marisa Wright, and Ken Kirk had allowed public records on their personal email accounts to be destroyed. Number seven, former city attorney Eric Johnson admitted and promoted his legal strategy to withhold slash hide records from public view by an apparent illegal blanket attorney-client privilege via CCing emails to him. Number eight, refusal by counsel to correct the public record regarding Councilwoman Jenny Reese's husband's Matt attendance at a city council meeting wherein he made numerous threats of physical violence towards me. Cedar Hills Citizen for Responsible Government representative. The letter goes on. The complete information can be seen at cedarhillscitizens.org. But we are deeply troubled that not only with our requests, but apparently American Fort Canyon and Preserve and Protect's requests for information that the mayor has withheld documents and or destroyed them, and claiming to be a public representative and serving the interests while disobeying the law. We would encourage you to respond to this email sooner than later and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you have questions, I would direct you to the city attorney. I'm sure that he will.
We have addressed this letter and have not had a response. Okay. That's why I'm reading this into the record.
So
you will be responding then, Mayor?
The city attorney will be, and obviously we disagree.
I find it interesting that you don't.
We're not going to have a debate here. You understand
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have questions. You go to the city attorney. Your 3 minutes is up.
Actually,
thank you very much for being here
on the chat room that you would respond to written letters, etc. And you don't, Mayor. Thank you for your time.
Okay, Mr. Hansen, I think you are first. Go right ahead. Can you give us your address?
Yes, 4091 Hayes Circle. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'm in my 11th year as a resident of Cedar Hill. I love this place. I've seen a lot of stuff. I know a lot of you have seen a lot of stuff too. As a citizen of Cedar Hills, I want to thank each of you for your responsible governance of our city. I don't know how else to say it. It's gratitude on my part. I also want you to know that you have my support. You have my debate, because I've debated with some of you. I will only debate you when I want to support you and understand what it is that we need to be doing correctly. Thank you for your obedience to the laws. Thank you for upholding the ordinances and covenants that we have in this city. Thank you for looking out for our best interests, and keep it up. You have my support. You have our family support. You have many of our friends' support. who won't be speaking today, but who I know you've heard from and who you will continue to hear from. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next is Mrs. Hagen.
Do you need to move that back, Ken?
I do not.
I think you do. I was involved with the city when that ordinance was created, and I don't recall any public comment from you that was arguing against that. There was a reason that we created that ordinance.
Mayor, I'd like to point out that city code states that movement of camera or video recording devices from the designated area without permission from the public body shall be cause for removal from the public meeting.
Yeah. That's why I pointed out to Mr. Cromar that he was disturbing our meeting. And disturbing a meeting is one of the reasons by which you can be removed. I don't want to have to do that, Mr. Cromar, but you know that we do have someone here that can remove you. And so, again, I'm going to ask you nicely to pick up your camera and move. Okay. So...
Mayor, could I suggest we take a 10-minute recess?
I move that we take a 10-minute recess.
I second that.
All those in favor taking a 10-minute recess?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We're going to take a 10-minute recess, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to take your seats, we will start up again. So this is what we're going to do. After speaking with a representative from American Fork Police, who's spoken with our city attorney, we're going to proceed with our meeting. And the city reserves the right to, at some future point, press charges if we choose to do so against Mr. Cromer or anyone else over there. So, but we're going to proceed with our meeting. So, Mrs. Hagen, I think that you are ready to go. If you can give us your name and address.
Yep, it's Sherelle Hagen. I live on Bristlecone Way. First off, I would encourage our city to uphold our ordinances. I know you guys spend a lot of time, as did I when I was on city council and those before all of us, creating those. And if somebody would like to change those ordinances, there is a process to do that. And I am in full support of following that process and have no problem if those ordinances need to get changed or altered. Having said that, I want to just thank all of you for the resolutions you have passed to try and protect our canyon. Lots of people know I have my own opinion on who knew what, when, and where. I'm doing my own personal research on that. I, however, do not favor the personal attacks on any of our elected officials when they get to the point where they are affecting their home and family. I watched a close friend of mine and his family suffer through that, and honestly, it's almost a death wish to be a mayor of this city. So I look forward to see who the next candidate's going to be for that. But having said that, I came to the meeting on Friday that you guys had, the special council meeting. Only resident in attendance, but it was of interest to me. I appreciated the time Daniel Zappala put in to putting together the survey that was to be sent out to all the residents, getting their opinion on what they would like to see in the commercial zone. As I sat there, contemplating what you guys were doing, I thought it was great. Also, I didn't think it was super necessary given that we have guidelines and such, but that's my own opinion. But what I was thinking about is how easy it is to conduct those surveys. And we are sitting in this predicament now with Snowbird on our doorstep trying to go up our canyon. And I just think it would have been a lot easier, saved a lot of people, one in particular, a lot of headache, if those of you that knew about meetings, any sort of discussion going on, maybe had Daniel conduct a survey of what the residents wanted, not only to find out what we would be opposed to going up the canyon, but just to inform the constituents of what you were doing. I think for us, that's where we struggle, is that by the time we were brought up to speed, it was panic mode. And now we're on the defensive end of this, trying to keep somebody out. Never underestimate your influence being on the city council. Don't think that your voice or your opinion doesn't matter because you're not the final vote on this. I've been an elected official for 4 years. Your opinion matters. So please represent us, your constituents, on what we are wanting. Find out what we're wanting, just like you did in that decision to put out the survey for our commercial zone, because I guarantee you what happens up that canyon is going to affect us and residents all around in our surrounding cities far more than 7 acres of commercial property. So I appreciate all that you have done, and thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. All right, so that's all of the people that I have listed to speak during public comments right now. Is there anybody I missed? I know there's some individuals that are going to be speaking before we get to item number 9, which is moved up on the scheduled items to be the very first. But is there anyone that wanted to speak now before I close this part of public comments? Nope. Okay, thank you. So I want to kind of lay out what the rules, if you will, are for tonight and the purposes for different sections of the meeting. So public comments is allowed, and the whole purpose of public comments is to allow residents to be able to come and express their opinion on anything that they want. And so they have 3 minutes to express that opinion. We typically dedicate about 30 minutes of the entire meeting to public comments, and that's what it's for. And so there's generally not a discussion, a give and take that takes place between the council and who's ever giving public comments at that time. If who's ever giving public comments wants to have a private conversation with a member of the council, they certainly can do that. But during the council meeting, that's not the time. I know that there's some heightened feelings about an item that's on the agenda tonight, and so, but I want to reiterate, this is not a debate. And so the people from Snowbird are here to talk about their approach towards American Fork Canyon watershed issues. I would expect them to have the ability to present their views without being interrupted. That's the whole point. And if anyone has opposing views, they certainly can come back at the next meeting and express them during public comments. But those of you, it looks like there's 4 more people that are going to be speaking prior to that, then again, you have 3 minutes that are where you can talk about whatever you'd want during those 3 minutes. So that's how we're going to handle a meeting. Moving on to our consent agenda, we have some minutes that we need to approve. These are minutes from the December 1st, 2015 meeting, council meeting, the January 5th, 2016 council meeting, and the January 19th, 20 city council meetings. We also have the appointment of Bill Knowlton and Ali Garbero to the Beautification, Recreation, Parks, and Trails Citizens Advisory Committee. So if someone would like to make a motion to accept the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I have a motion to accept the consent agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Zappala. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from my right, Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Mm-hmm. Bailey.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to city business, starting from my left, start with our city manager, Mr. Bunker. Time's yours.
Mayor and Council, just wanted to report that the ski bus started this last Saturday, or excuse me, starts this coming Saturday. So we have a full group of young members of our city that are going to be on that ski bus, and we appreciate the chaperones that are helping us with that as well. The Utah County Health Department has a 7-week course for seniors on how to remain active and healthy. And if you're interested in that, please look on the website or call the city office and we'll help you go to those meetings. I did not attend the Timpanogos Special Service District. I was out of town when they had their meeting, so next month I'll report on that. Thank you.
Mr. Bailey.
Can I ask a quick question on that senior course? Is that going to be held here?
It is. It's held in this building.
Mr. Bailey.
The Arts Committee met
this past last week, and they're wanting to do an activity on the 20th and the 19th of this month. Elizabeth is the chair of that. She'll get us some more information as we get it. That's all I've got.
Mr. Zappala.
Mayor and I both attended the Lone Peak Public Safety District meeting, and I'll let the mayor report on that since he was there for longer than I was. As the council knows, I've been spending most of my time on the process that we're undergoing to revise our city code with respect to our commercial zoning guidelines. And so for the public's benefit, please be aware that we'll have a survey coming to your email regarding that, and that we will have ample time for public input during some public meetings as we address changes to our zoning.
Thank you. During the Lone Peak Public Safety meeting, we voted in a new chair and vice chair. And so Tim Irwin from Highland will continue as chair this year. And Mr. Zappala was voted in as vice chairman. We appreciate his service there. We still are dealing with some personnel issues, but also replacing some vehicles. And so as soon as we start dealing with budget items on that, then I will bring that back to your attention. And that's all I have. Mrs. Reese, you're up next.
The Family Festival Committee met, and they began discussing plans for the events. And so Family Festival will be the week of May 31st through June 4th. There will not be any activities on Monday night, as that is Memorial Day. And I will email you all a list of what's planned so far. The website has been updated with the dates as well, and that will be continue to be updated as things move forward. And then the Parks and Trails Committee met to discuss their plans for the year, and I forgot to bring those dates, but I will email those to you, and they will be coming to the council soon with their requested budget for the fiscal year 2017.
Thank you. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah, I went to my first meeting with North Point Solid Waste Special Service District last week, and elected the chairman for this next year, Randy Farnworth, and he's been the chairman for a long time. So that was renewed him as chairman. We also appointed a UASD board member alternate, which ended up being Commissioner Larry Ellertson, was voted in as an alternate. And we talked about fences that they're going to need to try to prohibit people from getting into the area, as well as planning, making some site plans for next year. So,
thank you. Mr. Geddes.
Yes, I'd like to report that there has not been a meeting with the Utah Valley Dispatch. However, I did get an update on their building. They did pour some footings, so construction is underway on the new facility in Spanish Fork. And their meeting will be next. I'll report the next meeting.
Okay.
And then the Finance Committee is trying to find a date, I think, to meet.
Thank you. And so if there is another council member who wants to attend finance meetings with us, we can allow for one more spot. So Mr. Geddes is a permanent member of that, as am I. But if someone else wants to attend, just let us know, and we will arrange that. Don't just show up, because there may be someone else who's just showing up as well.
Mayor, I believe Councilmember Bailey is also appointed to that committee.
Oh, we did put you then.
Yes.
I stand corrected. I thought we only had one. We do have two. So unless someone is not showing, then we have our quorum. So let's move on. Item number 9 has been moved to our first scheduled item. There are four individuals that will be speaking on this first. And so you'll have 3 minutes, starting with Mrs. Wright.
Marisa Wright, 9102 Silver Lake Drive. I'd like to speak about this item. I've come before you before. Couple of concerns, the water and the public easement going through it. But first off, with the water, I spoke to you the last time about the Yankee Mine. I went to the County Commission meeting last week, spoke about the Yankee Mine, and no real studies that we have seen have been done about the enormity of the pollutants behind there. At that meeting, Bob Bonner brought a big packet of material saying these are the studies. Our group asked that those studies be made public, and that so we could see that they were really that the Yankee mine was cleaned up. He has not, to my knowledge, yet made those public. The problem with it is the Yankee mine is in the area that he wants to expand. If that expansion goes on, mines like that can be disturbed. He told on himself at the last county commission meeting when he said that an expert said that it's okay as long as you don't step on the dirt. That would be a huge indicator to me that it's a very fragile situation. I would like you to ask him how he can ensure that people don't step on the dirt. This is not just the Yankee mine we're talking about. It's other mines up there, but the Yankee mine is a big one. There's so many mines up there in his property that need to be cleaned up. And if they are that fragile that experts have told him to not step on the dirt and everything will be fine, that's a huge issue for the quality of our water. And if those mines get disturbed, pollutants can come out and taint our water at levels that we may not know until it's too late. Please do not let this get to the point where it's too late. I know you're not the deciding factors here, but we have to put pressure on Snowbird. All of us need to. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person is Mark Allen. Mark, if you wouldn't mind coming forward, stating your name and address, and then you've got 3 minutes.
Mark Allen, live in Linden, Utah. Protect and Preserve American Fork Canyon. Thank you for hosting this. I guess it was at the request of Snowbird that you've got this meeting, is my understanding. Over the past 9 months, I have done a number of grammar requests which have painted a picture which is very concerning to me. Most recently, one as I received grammar response with your city, your mayor specifically, indicating that in February of 2015, there was an email that was sent to him talking about a land swap. And that was very concerning because he's told us many times that he didn't know about it until May, June of this year. In addition to that, he had in his possession 2 years ago an attorney-client privilege document from Bob Bonar at the mayor's request. Why did he know about that? Why did he have it? It's Snowbird's game plan for taking over the canyon. Maps have been withheld, citing a proprietary whatever, and we're trying to get those because those are in his possession. They tell you more of what the game plan is. The mayor can respond to your counsel. It's in your court. Disappointed that Bob Bonar would be utilizing and, in my view, using people in an inappropriate way, which to me borders on criminal. Second, Yankee Mine. My understanding is today is there's about 3,000 linear feet of mines up there. Ted Fitzgerald sent me some facts that potential is close to 500,000 gallons of water could be retained up in those mines. And the land that's in question, you know, Bob Bonar and his team, like an old quarterback, talk about the glory days and how much good they did with the Pacific and Dutchman mine, and they did. It's about 1 acre they cleaned up on the Dutchman, or about 2 acres on Dutchman, about one on the Pacific, so about 3 acres they've cleaned up. There's about 6 acres over in the Globe and the Yankee mine. They had a partnership with the EPA and Trouts Unlimited. I would strongly encourage Bob Bonar to join step with the EPA and Trouts Unlimited and clean up the 6 acres. If they clean up the 6 acres, most of the problem in the canyon goes away. But there's a hesitancy, deflection. They have ownership of the property there. They bought it encumbered. Prescriptive easements, the same thing. They bought the property with prescriptive easements. They can't displace the locals without violating prescriptive easements. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item is Mr. Hagan.
Devo Hagen, 10375 Bristle Cone. Again, council members, I want to thank you for your service and your time. I would like to understand why Snowbird has requested this meeting, this presentation time from our city in particular. And I would also then encourage each of you, as we think about what is going to transpire in our canyon, that we as a city do everything we can to have our voice be heard. Whether our position personally is in favor or in opposition, you all individually and collectively represent the will of the city of Cedar Hills. And it is my hope that you will do whatever is in your power to properly and effectively represent the needs and the wishes of the citizens of this city in regards to whatever transpires in American Fork Canyon. We seem to be talking now about making sure that Snowbird doesn't contaminate the water, but we haven't yet even agreed that we should allow Snowbird to make the swap and the other changes that they're wanting to do in that canyon. The secondary issue is then making it safe when they do make those changes for our water. And I think we need to start with, is it even necessary, appropriate, and the will of the people of this city and the surrounding cities in this county that this change happen to our canyon? I'm a skier. I'm not saying that I'm opposed to skiing. I think there's plenty of places for me to enjoy that. And I'm concerned as I drive every day, my commute takes me down Canyon Road and make a left-hand turn onto SR-92. That commute for me will be encumbered by whatever changes happen in that canyon. Either the road is widened, a new light is established, whatever is needed to support the changes that are being proposed by Snowbird. And I am opposed to it. And I would like to know that you as a council have listen to the community that you represent and that you are doing whatever you can to get in front of the county and the other situations necessary to make sure that the needs of the citizens of Cedar Hills are represented properly even before we talk about the water and the issues with construction that might contaminate our city's water. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagen. Our last person is Jason Goetz.
Jason Goetz, resident of American Fork City. Thank you for the time to be here and for your public service. I want to reiterate some points that Mark Allen made. I also spent some time poring through grammar requests from emails pertaining to Cedar Hills and some others, and there is very disconcerting information found there. Also, a lot of holes, as he mentioned. I followed the Snowbird crew from American Fork tonight, knowing this meeting was taking place. I wanted to be at both, so they've heard from me tonight. But I want to put a message out there to the residents of Cedar Hills. Everyone needs to be concerned and raise questions about the watershed. Why does Snowbird, and you'll probably hear this in their presentation, they say there's enough studies over the last 20 and 30 years. Most of them were done 15 and 20 years ago. Why are they recommending that we're okay to move forward with their proposed building up the canyon with expansion without doing more study? Marissa brought up the Yankee mine. I think the risks far outweigh the odds with the Yankee mine. Why are we not asking Snowbird or a third party to do more studies on the Yankee mine so we don't have a Gold Hill a Gold King mine spill that was recently experienced in Colorado into the Animas River? That could happen here. What are the odds? I don't know. They're probably pretty slim, but do the risks outweigh those odds? I think that's really, really important. Also question, and I brought this up with Snowbird as well, but I think it's important for Cedar Hills, who's responsible? Is there a plan in place that if that rarity, catastrophic event happened, you know, who's responsible? What's the plan? Is there anything going to be in place? Has Snowbird been talking about this? So those are the two big points that I'd want to make about watershed. You know, I would just ask Snowbird, Bob Bonar, in recent meetings, previous meetings, he's mentioned the desire he has to be open with his processes with the public. And as a member of the Utah County, a resident of Utah County in American Fork City, I don't feel like there has been transparency. There hasn't been an openness. That needs to be there, Bob. I think there needs to be more of a public setting where we can, you know, you host a meeting and we'll all come. But, you know, access, rights of way, those are big issues. Water, big issues. And I'll leave that because my time's done.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks.
Appreciate your time. Okay. Our first scheduled item is going to be representatives from Snowbird talking about American Fork Canyon watershed issues. And I'm going to take a couple of minutes and try and correct some of the things that have been said tonight. And so this is not a debate or discussion with anyone, but I feel like an obligation to correct some things that have been said specifically about me. So regarding grandma issues or email retention, then Mr. Allen, you had mentioned a legal memo from Marty Banks of Stoll Reeves. It's a PDF document, meaning I don't have the ability to change that. I don't. If you want the whole PDF document, you're welcome to it. But from what I understand, you have everything that I received. So where it references graphs and charts, they're not included with the PDF. If you wanted those, then you'd need to go to Mr. Banks. You also asked an attachment to an email from one of the city staff to me regarding some thank you letters that I was sending to them. I printed out some copies. If you want to see that, then you're welcome to them. So I think we have complied with every grandma request legally that has ever been presented to Cedar Hills. And so if you have a problem with that, then I suggest you speak with our city attorney and deal with that. That's the proper way of dealing with that. In terms of honesty and transparency, which you talk about a lot, I want to talk about your organization, because I think it's losing credibility in Cedar Hills very quickly. So apparently you have 40 or so people who are site administrators with your site. In your own words, you lost contact of who they are. I'd like to know who those 40 people are, each person individually. You said you deleted four of them over this last weekend. I'd like to know who those four people are and why. What was your vetting process for allowing these people who you didn't keep track of to be able to post on your website? And how do you screen to make sure or fact check what they say is actually correct? There's a problem with that, and I think you know that. Because if you don't fact check what they're saying, that they have the ability to go and slander anyone. That opens you up to liability, as I'm sure you know. So, you know, I think you need to apologize to all who have been slandered by you, or people that have been slandered by your website. So there was a reason. I'm talking.
Can I respond?
No, you can't. So there's a reason that you banned four people from your site. You don't just arbitrarily do that. So I'd like to know why that is. Put it on your website. Put the names of every person who's an admin on your website. How they were approved. What was the vetting process for getting them approved? How do you make sure that everything that they post is vetted and accurate? You say on your website that you don't have a board. I'd like to know why you don't have a board. I sit on lots of boards, a lot of nonprofits I've sat on, and the whole purpose for a board is to prevent the CEO or executives from getting off track, and also to keep the organization on its mission. I don't think it's a coincidence that you don't have a board. I think you don't want a board. There seems to be a philosophy that you and some other people have that it doesn't matter what we do. It matters what we think, or what you think that we're going to think. That is a concept completely foreign to me. I don't know where you're coming with that. Everyone knows my position here on American Fort Canyon, yet it continues to be mischaracterized on your website. Everyone knows that as an individual who uses American Fort Canyon and likes it as it is. I also like the idea of catching a gondola at Tibble Fork and riding it up to the top and seeing all the beautiful scenery below, the wildlife, the wilderness, and all of that. But as a mayor, every resident of Cedar Hills knows I never came to the city and said, there's a great economic development and recreation story up the canyon. We need to get behind that. You know that never happened. I said that at the American Fork meeting. That never happened. So everyone also knows that there was a group that went to Europe. I was asked to go. I politely said no, not because I had a scheduling conflict, but I felt like it would be inappropriate. A lot of people received campaign contributions. I didn't ask for one. I didn't receive one. So the only thing that you can say is that I think differently than you. I happen to like an idea, but there's never a vote that I took to help out Snowbird or Save Our Canyons, both of which had ideas. There's not a vote that Cedar Hills Council is going to take to help Snowbird or Save Our Canyons. Again, both of who had ideas. From what I can tell, Cedar Hills residents are never going to vote on this. So you have every right to come and make points, and that's totally fine. That's what the meetings are for. I just want to be clear in terms of what I have done and what I haven't done. And so just because I have an idea that I like, where I haven't gone to the residents and said, let's get behind this, that has never been accurately portrayed on your site. So what's really ironic, Mark, is that I created a committee, or helped create a committee, to study the impact on American Fort Canyon for decades. And you were scared, and you destroyed this committee because you didn't understand it. Now I hear you want to create a committee made up of the very same types of people to do the very same things. If you would have taken the time to maybe come to us and say, I want a seat at this table, we would have said, sure, pull up a chair. You're welcome to it. But you didn't. And you seem to mistake the idea that American Fort Canyon land swap was not something our committee was ever dealing with. That was a Mountain Accord issue. Your beef was with them. It was not with us. And that's an unfortunate thing. So what I've learned in a lot of years in business is that a leader who makes corrections is given respect, and he's followed by people behind him. People who don't make corrections, and I'm referring to your site, people who don't make corrections lose the trust of their people and respect. So this is not my fight for Snowbird. This is their fight. And I think everyone on our committee was honestly engaged in a process. You had members from UTA, UDOT, Snowbird, Sundance, Save Our Canyons, elected officials, lots of people. And again, those are the type of people I hear you want on your committee. So this just reminds me of a book that I heard about in college a long time ago by Saul Alinsky called Rules for Radicals, where you pick a demon and over again demonize that person, that villain. Because you know that if you repeat something often enough, even if it's not true, people are going to believe it. So you do whatever you want with your website. But I would say if you want it to be considered credible, because I do think in the city of Cedar Hills, it is quickly losing credibility, and I think you know that. So. So that we're not going to have a discussion here.
Okay.
So, but council, sorry for taking some time, but I felt like this was important. If you have issues with the city attorney, I suggest that you take them up with him. Now, our first scheduled item is by our representatives from Snowbird. So whoever's represent, Bob, are you going to be? Okay.
I'm going to start.
Thank you very much.
I would like to, well, my name is Bob Bonar. I'm the president and general manager of Snowbird Resort. And I'd like to start by thanking this board for your service to our community and to Cedar Hills and for this job that you do. I want to start by, our intent tonight is to talk about water quality. We all care about water quality with our proposal and with our project. I think our track record speaks to that, whether it's in American Fork Canyon and the cleanups that we've done, or the cleanups and working with Salt Lake City and their municipal watershed, our track record will tell you that we care about water quality on everything that we do. And our presentation tonight, which will be done by Neil Arts from Cirrus Environmental Studies, I think will help illustrate that commitment and our commitment on this project and help show you a lot of the studies that we've done that in regards to water quality with our associated project. I think this presentation tonight will be meaningful and help clear the air to those of you that where your concern with our project is water quality. If your intent with our project is to keep Snowbird, prevent Snowbird from moving forward with our proposal on our private land, and that's it, and you're using water quality as an issue to try and just stop us from doing anything, then I don't think our presentation tonight will be that meaningful to you. Before I turn it over to Neil, I would just like to make clear what is in our proposal. There has been tremendous misunderstandings with what our proposal is. And our proposal right now that we gave to Utah County and to the Board of Adjustments recently, it includes relocating one of the ski lifts that in Mineral Basin. As most of you know, some of you know, if you ski at Snowbird or if you've ATV'd or hiked or ridden a horse up to our property up there, we've had two ski lifts in Mineral Basin for coming up on 20 years. And we want to relocate and add capacity to one of those lifts. The other part of our proposal is that we want to add two lifts to our private property in Upper Mary Ellen Gulch and also include in one of those lifts a zip line. Okay, 100% of what we're proposing is on our private property. It does not extend down into American Fork Canyon. It should have no impact on traffic in American Fork Canyon, and that's the extent of what we're proposing. Two additional lifts in Upper Mary Ellen Gulch and a realignment of the Mineral Basin lift. There are some necessary avalanche control devices that are a part of that proposal in Upper Mary Ellen Gulch and Mineral Basin, and there's also what we characterize as ancillary ski-related facilities as a part of that. So warming hut, ski patrol facilities, and things like that. So I just wanted to clear the air on what we're proposing and maybe more importantly, what we're not proposing on our private property up there. With that, I again thank all of you for making time. I know it's late. A lot of us have already put in a long day, and I appreciate the time, and I appreciate your attention to to Neil and to the water studies that he's done.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Neil Arts. I'm a Millville resident. And I'm told that some...
Neil, would you mind moving the microphone a little bit closer to where you're speaking? There you go.
How's that sound? I'd like to make a few points about why my qualifications for addressing this complicated issue. I got a PhD in renewable natural resources from USU's College of Natural Resources. And have been in the environmental contracting consulting field for 25 years. I and a partner have had our own company, hung out our own shingle in 2000. Have a staff of about 6 people, including our watershed hydrologist, Eric Duffin, who's with us tonight. Our stock in trade is doing environmental impact reviews and compliance reviews for government agencies, addressing most frequently NEPA, often the Endangered Species Act, often the Clean Water Act, any other body of regulation that determines how land's used, basically. In the course of our 16 years of existence, we've completed about close to 100 major analyses of this type. The majority of them have been with the Forest Service. The majority have been in the Intermountain West. And the majority have involved winter sports developments of various kinds. I think we've maintained a pretty indisputably sound reputation for this kind of work through that history. And I think that the reason for that we've been able to maintain that reputation is our commitment to objectivity and to sound science in answering these questions. I'm confident that that's why Snowbird selected us to do this review. That said, it's a big and complicated issue that we're looking at here, and I think setting some context and really defining what question we are engaged to address is. Mining-related water quality issues aren't new. They've been recognized since the mid-70s in Upper American Fork drainage. Towards the late 80s, they started getting more traction with a more environmentally aware populace, and initial assessments resulted in the EPA's decision to include Upper American Fork on their surplus inventory. So that's an inventory of contaminated sites and the basis for the EPA deciding, do we go on and pursue other remedial actions or not? The next steps, the National Priorities List, Superfund site, federal funding and efforts towards remediation and so forth. That listing as a surplus site triggered a number of other studies and evaluations that led to, were compiled into the EPA's preliminary assessment of what was going on there, and their decision in 95 and reaffirmed in 2002 to issue what they call a NFRAP, or a no further remedial action plan. So they reviewed the situation and decided that they didn't have any other thing to recommend or carry on with to proceed with remediation. Despite that, they collaborated with the Forest Service, with the Utah Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining, with Snowbird, with Trout Unlimited, a number of other state agencies and organizations to complete remediation efforts that targeted the prime, most offensive sites identified in Upper American Fork, the sites that warranted identification of the surplus site in the first place.
I can't understand what site?
Surplus.
How do you spell that?
C-E-R-C-L-I-S.
Surplus, okay.
Yeah. I'd have to look at the computer to come up with what that nasty acronym stands for, but it's an inventory established by the of contaminated sites. So under various groupings involving those organizations, the Dutchman Mine Repository was completed in 2003, and although it only addressed a couple of acres, it only at the end of the day comprised a couple of acres, it took contaminated materials from the Dutchman mine itself, from the Bog Mine, which is another major site around water, bad high metals concentrations from the Sultana smelter that was operated up there around the turn of the century, from a lot of places, and gathered them into a repository that basically put a floor under them and stacked the materials in there, put an impermeable membrane over them, drained water around them, put topsoil on top of them and reseeded it, and put them away, put them to bed. Subsequently, in 2006, recognizing that all of those sites were on National Forest System land, recognizing that some of the other priority sites down there in Lower Mineral Basin and close to the North Fork of the American Fork were on private land, then a cooperative effort between the Forest Service and private landowners, primarily Snowbird, was initiated and wound up with the Pacific Mine Repository. They did basically the same thing with a lot of materials from the Pacific Mine, from the Scotsman Mine, and from a few other targets of opportunity around in that area. Again, compiling material from a lot of sites into one repository. That left the main smoking gun, so to speak, and resulting from the first, from those extensive studies in the late 80s and early 90s, was Upper Mary Ellen Gulch, and variously referred to as Mary Ellen Gulch Mines, as the Yankee Mine, as the Globe Mine, all of that sort of collectively, all that heavily mined area in the upper reaches of Mary Ellen Gulch. Those studies identified some mine tailings, primarily two big tailings piles on the quartzite claim, the big, highly colorful ones that you see up there in any air photo and that have been circulated around on websites and so forth. Those in themselves were noted to have high total metals concentrations, not soluble, but total. So they're locked in place, they're locked into soils and stuff, and don't move unless the soils move. And the second issue noted there was portal discharge from the northernmost of the live Yankee mine portals that up to that point had drained out of the portal and across those tailings piles, in the process picking up a lot of heavy metals. So the recommendation from the Forest Service remediation people with EPA agreement and Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining agreement was that what you should do there is leave those pilings in place, because there's not a place, there's not a good flat spot for a repository. There was lower in Mineral Basin a good place to do that, and there's not up there. And they say things like, throughout the West, mine tailings that have high total metals concentrations that aren't close to water bodies are not a priority for us. Recommendation for this site is leave the main mine tailings be and reroute that mine portal water around them so it doesn't pick up the additional contamination from the tailings piles. Starting in 97, Snowbird did that with a sort of, well, with an on-site kind of pick and shovel approach. Building a ditch and building up a berm and stuff that just directed the water away from the tailings pile and over down an embankment and into the natural water body. In 2008, with Trout Unlimited funding and the help of the Forest Service engineer who designed the two previous repositories, and again with Trout Unlimited participation, they put in a more active drainage system to accomplish that goal, to make sure the drainage continued to flow from the mine, didn't get impeded by dirt falling into it and so forth, and constructed a small 2-foot high wall, a pipe in it, an 8-inch pipe or 10-inch pipe in it, cobble rock behind it, geotex fabric over it, and bury the thing so the water continued to drain as it had before, but was captured by this wall into a pipe and routed into the creek. With those three remediation projects done, water quality immediately downstream, 100 yards downstream, went from not meeting the most rigid standard applied to that water body, which is the cold water fisheries standard, the 3A standard, to meeting it within 100 yards downstream. After that remediation project was done. In North Fork of American Fork River itself, most metals were reduced significantly. Some were not. Iron stayed fairly high. Most metals were reduced by from half to 80%. But the most important thing to note in looking at those water quality sampling results is that even before, and that I'm at the confluence of Mary Ellen Gulch Creek and Upper American Fork, North Fork, American Fork, it already met water quality standards. It already met all standards assigned to it by the state. And these remediation efforts and reducing them by significantly brought them that much below the standards, below the state assigned standards. So I guess the take home there is that the impacts then, and I'd maintain still, are highly localized. So how could that be? How could you have such high concentrations in those tailing piles and in the portal water and not have a greater or more widespread effect on water quality in the watershed? And I think the reasons are the constituents, as I mentioned, are mostly total metals that are chemically bonded to soil particles and so forth and stay in those tailing piles unless something knocks them out of there and they wash away or blow away. The dissolved concentrations are considerably lower generally. The next question is what the loads are. It's just how much is there? You know, there's a volume of each one of those metals that's in play here. And that's going into a body of water that's gaining as it goes down. The American Fork River, as it moves down the canyon, is called a gaining reach, which means that water from springs seeps, the mountains run off, everything compiles, and the stream gains flow as it goes down, and that flow dilutes the contaminants. The old saw is that the solution to pollution is dilution, and plenty of it takes place between Upper American Fork and the mouth of the canyon. So to put some numbers on that, the project area that in combining Mineral Basin and Mary Ellen Gulch is about 2.2% of the American Fork watershed. The 3 CFS that we estimate is the flow at the boundary of the project area comprises about 5% of the flow, annual average flow, at the mouth of the canyon, and about less than 0.5% of the 153,000 acre-feet of recharge that goes into the northern Utah Valley aquifer. So it's a small amount of water carrying a substantial load of metals in a local scenario, a smaller amount of metals the further down the canyon you get. So it's a big watershed. It's got some metals in it, and it produces a lot of high-quality water. That all comes together so that by the time you get to the mouth, by the time you get to Tibble Fork, there's never been an exceedance of these standards below Tibble Fork. So against this backdrop, the question that we were asked to answer, and consistent with the Utah County Land Use Ordinance, is whether what Snowbird's proposing to do would create any environmental risk, and in this case we're talking about water quality. So further clarifications might be anytime, as evident from the comments that we've heard tonight and have heard for some time, anytime a complex issue like this gets into the public arena where people are as they should be, passionate and involved in it, then some misinterpretations and some misconceptions are bound to arise. The first one that we hear frequently here is, we need more studies. Well, we've, in the course of doing this review, we looked at 14 studies completed from, I don't know, the early part of the last century through fairly recently, I don't know, into the well into this century, well into the 2000s. We found just as a quick check that there's probably been 1,000 water quality samples collected in Upper American Fork, run through lab analysis and into these reports. What we believe to be the case is that the situation is well studied. It's well understood. The problem areas and the water quality problems and the threats to water quality have been identified, and in large measure they've been dealt with. They've been dealt with to the degree that the people who are responsible for safeguarding such resources have said, you've done what should be done. That's evidenced by the EPA's NFRAP and by these ongoing recommendations from the Forest Service, the EPA, and DOGGM, that in the case of Mary Ellen Gulch, leave it in place, drain the water around it, and leave it be. That's what this proposal would do. The second misconception that keeps popping his head up is that the project has the potential to change water supplies or water quantity. I don't know if that's a concern shared by this group, but I guess in briefest terms, the proposal doesn't include anything involving water use. There's no snowmaking. There's no diversion of water for any purpose, for culinary use or anything else. There's the biggest water issue is they may sell bottled water in the warming huts. But beyond that, there's not a reason that this project would affect water supplies. Okay, that said, in terms of the brass tacks of water quality effects, the American Fork River and its tributaries have no drinking water standards assigned to them by the state. The standards are for secondary contact recreation, for cold water fisheries, and for agriculture. That said, we know that communities in this area do depend on it for culinary water, but it's through springs and wells, and the biggest consideration is groundwater recharge. As in most mountain situations like this, there's bedrock aquifers in the mountains. In the valley blocks, colluviums filled in. You've got loosely consolidated materials. That's where you put your wells. That's where the groundwater flows. That, I guess, points the finger at what's the cutting edge issue. The key point here is what's the water quality at the mouth of the canyon as it enters that primary recharge zone. And according to all counts, including the most recent USGS studies, that water quality is the freshest and the youngest and the highest quality water entering groundwater in the region. So it is certainly a resource that warrants your attention and caretaking. Even before the remediation work was done, as I said, the water clear up in the high in the drainage up in the North Fork met water quality standards. It's diluted as you move down the canyon, and significantly, as we said, it's a 20-fold increase from the project discharge from the project area. That's the potential smoking gun here. But by the time it gets to the mouth of the river, it's a 20-fold increase in the dilution factor. And it already meets standards up there. So I guess, not to put too sharp a point on it, but it's just unrealistic to think that you could put enough minerals new into the water from that site that would first of all result in a localized exceedance of water quality standards and overcome the remediation efforts that were done in Mary Ellen Gulch. Next, that you put in and multiply that by a few times and get to where you overcame the remedial effects of the Dutchman and Pacific Mine repositories, which were significant. Some of the worst metals were reduced by 80% there. So you'd have to bump it up far enough to take it back to what it was before the remediation efforts were done. And then recognizing that it still met water quality standards then, you'd have to bump that up several times, depending on the metal, whether it's a small bump or a huge one, to make that water not meet water quality standards. And then that's into the stream getting diluted 20 times before you could approach a standard at the canyon mouth. So all of that math just puts you into really an impossible situation in terms of having this project generate enough metals contamination to have a significant impact on water quality at the canyon mouth and going into your aquifers. And it's not, because, well, that's your say on it, or that's your takeaway from this data. But we don't, in this case, we don't even have to run the experiment. It's out there in front of us, because from the time you started monitoring water quality in your municipal wells in the 40s and 50s until now, there's only been one exceedance of water quality standards in those wells. So the proof's in the pudding. The experiment's already been done. If you were going to have water quality issues in your groundwater here resulting from those mine things, wouldn't they have occurred back before the remediation efforts were done? Beyond that, there are a few other watershed characteristics to keep in mind. I think one is that these primary recharge areas are in a small but kind of abrupt delta at the mouth of the canyon, where the water is easily infiltrated and where the 30% of American Forks flow that the USGS estimates goes into groundwater recharge, that's where it occurs, is right away outside of the canyon mouth in those coarsest unconsolidated materials. It's a small enough area that only a few wells shared by these valley communities are in that material. The rest of them are further out in the secondary recharge zone, where they're deeper and where they're tapping aquifers that are protected from that first initial recharge zone and protected as a regulatory term, I guess. It means that there's coarser material, clays and sand beds, that are less permeable to water than the coarser material on either side of them. So when they're sandwiched in there, water from above doesn't permeate down and get into them. And most of the wells are out in that zone, which is largely unaffected by groundwater input from American Fork River, and much more, up to 70% estimated by the USGS, is water that comes from the bedrock aquifer, which is dissolved metals, whatever constituents are in it are dissolved, not this surface transport of sediment, and that water quality is not affected by what's in the American Fork or other tributaries. So most of the water comes from a source that just simply can't physically be affected by this operation. And I guess that's to say that in the event that something happened in Mary Ellen Gulch that had an adverse impact that did translate downstream, then there are still enough of these physical limitations of the aquifer and the recharge system in place to limit any potential water quality impact to groundwater. The second thing that's been talked about is, a lot of communities, irrigation companies, and so forth, divert irrigation water and secondary sources for landscape irrigation near the mouth of the canyon. And what are the potential effects on that water? There is a standard in place for that. And relative to the standard, water at the canyon mouth around the points of diversion, the observed concentrations now are roughly like 5% of what the standard is. So again, you'd have to increase them 20 times at the mouth of the canyon to start bumping against agricultural standards, and you have to do that out of a water body that's only providing 20% of the water into that system. So you got 20 times 20, whatever. I'm not sure how you do that math, but it's a big. You have to put a lot more metal in for it to register as a threat to agricultural water quality standard exceedance at the mouth of the canyon. Another issue that's been discussed is just whether it involves tailing, highly mineralized tailings piles, or just the mineralized soils that are natural in an area like this that's mined. I mean, it was mined because nature put a lot of minerals near the surface of the earth there, so they're around. Mines aren't the only source of them. So any construction can disturb those total locked in the soil kinds of metals and put them into the water supply. I think the biggest take home there is that Snowbird's operated for approaching 50 years now in Little Cottonwood Canyon, which is Salt Lake City's municipal watershed, and under the magnifying glass of Salt Lake Public Utilities and the Forest Service, which is an active partner in maintaining water quality in that drainage. And as a result, they've really come up with, and we've worked at 40 or 50 ski areas throughout the West, and not just the West, East Coast as well, where water quality issues are even bigger. We have yet to experience construction BMPs and disturbed site rehab practices that are on a par with Snowbirds. They're the source of the BMPs in the Forest Service's ski area construction BMP handbook and all. So they do a good job. And water quality monitoring in Little Cottonwood Canyon shows that it's been effective in safeguarding water quality in that watershed. Another issue that's come up is this recreational impact, and the don't stand on the ground warning is from, it's not a water quality related thing, it's a a human health direct physical contact thing, because some of those tailings piles on the quartzite claim have total metals concentrations that are well above recommended health standards. So breathing them is not a good thing. And the don't stand on them is actually, if Ted Fitzgerald would say, I can stand on them, okay, they're hard as a rock, you're not dislodging any dust by walking around on them, but don't operate any machinery on them, don't dig on them, don't excavate them. And at this point, they're open to motorized recreation. I mean, it's most any time you're up there, there's an ATV running around there someplace. Now, they're steep enough and hard enough that it's, even with today's machines and stuff, I think it's hard to get a purchase on there and do much. But the point is that there's no regulation of recreation on them now, and public contact with those materials. One of Snowbird's mitigation measures listed in their application is will end any recreational access to those tailings piles. And if they're back there, they got the wherewithal to do it. They got people back there to detect it, the equipment to construct any barriers necessary to do whatever they need to do to keep recreationists off of them, which is not the situation today. Another concern that's been raised is about avalanches. Now, what happens if avalanches, and Snowbird's proposing the avalanche devices to trigger avalanches up there? I guess the first thing that struck me about that observation, that concern, was that avalanches have been part of that natural landscape from the get-go. As long as those tailings piles have been there, if they're in an avalanche path, they've been in an avalanche path, and they're not noticeably moved around or scraped off the mountain or anything by them. And that's because avalanches, even the big hard slab avalanches that, in avalanche parlance, that run to the ground, that take the whole thickness of snow down to the ground and everything goes, take tall vegetation. They certainly knock trees out and stuff like that, maybe take some brush, but they don't generally disturb the soil surface.
Dr. Arsht?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I don't want to prevent you from giving everything that you want to give, but I want to allow the council members time to ask questions if they choose, and there's other things on the agenda. About how much time do you think that you're going to need?
5 minutes.
Take
that work?
It.
Okay. Two other points, I guess, just to the key points about avalanche, are that the avalanche program, what they're proposing to do is to keep snow on the mountain. I mean, what a ski area wants is to have snow on the mountain, not laying in a pile at the bottom, as well as protecting infrastructure and people from avalanches. So the objective of avalanche control programs at ski areas is to have more frequent, less intense avalanches that get rid of the instabilities, take some slough off, but don't push it all to the bottom. So take home, the avalanches under this scenario would be less spectacular, less potential to damage anything. And in case in point for the tailings piles that we're concerned with most on the quartzite claim, they happen to sit below the mine works, which are probably intentionally located below a big knob with a big slide path going on that side and a big slide path going on that side, and they're in a protective zone and not within a slide path. Monitoring, another key concern has been, how would we know if something went wrong? How would we know quickly if something went wrong? And in response to that concern that's been brought to the Board of Adjustment's attention, we have developed a monitoring plan to look at the metals of concern at the project area boundary after studying them intensively to establish a baseline and figure out what our starting point is realistically, and then continue for 10 years, through the construction period, through operations, and on, and see if 10 years is enough. If we've got a stable situation then maybe that's enough. If not, then Snowbird's indicated the willingness to carry on doing that as long as we want. They have in Little Cottonwood. They've continuously monitored it, water quality there from the get-go. So I think that information will be in place so that Snowbird, the county, the regulatory agencies will have ready access. If something goes wrong, they'll know about it and have what they need to do something about it. Briefest terms about this water backed up in Yankee Mine, in the live Yankee Mine. First of all, the existence of water backed up in there is speculative. second the idea of a plug in it is that somebody has somehow been plugged is speculative. The water that we've observed, there are several places where it runs out of that mine. It's not restricted to one. Most of those mine portals are naturally caved in, but some of them have pipes. The one in question has a drain system installed in it. That water runs continuously at a fairly consistent or at least seasonally appropriate flow. It looks to me like a system in equilibrium, like water comes in, accumulates in the mine, and drains out. We've talked to Dogum, we've talked to past owners and operators of those mines and stuff, and nobody says, well, we put a plug in there for any reason, to keep people out, to keep water in, which would be a silly thing to do, nothing. So I think that both of those factors are speculative, but the key point, to my mind, is whatever it is, whatever lurks behind that pile of dirt in that mine tunnel, is not going to be affected by this project. There's nothing going on there. It's specifically stay away from the tailing piles, stay away from the mines, stay away from there. There's nothing that we're doing that could legitimately affect that situation. So if there's a problem there, in light of the Gold King mine, I'm sure that Snowbird's concerned about it as anybody. There's probably something to be done there, but in the context of the CUP application, this project does nothing to change the current conditions. So in conclusion, I think from the 30,000 foot view, the biggest generality is that if something were going to happen to affect groundwater, water quality throughout the system, the bad old days are gone. It would have happened and it would have manifested before the remediation projects were done. In terms of Mary Ellen Gulch specifically, then there are notable water quality impacts right there. I mean, the macroinvertebrates, the fish, the so forth, right on the site have been affected. But boom, 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 within 100 yards below, things come within standards. By the time you get to the American Fork River, you're well within standards. By the time you get to the mouth of the canyon, nothing's been detected. So the mine dumps, the portal discharge, the mining history in Mary Ellen Gulch certainly poses a water quality consideration. In the Upper American Fork, throughout the watershed, there's possibilities, but the risk that exists there today existed there yesterday and will exist there tomorrow, and nothing that this project is proposing to do alters that situation. And in fact, by doing things like maintaining the drainage, having equipment access to the site to maintain the drainage around the Yankee Mine portal, by being able to regulate recreational access to the mine dumps, by taking care of avalanche control, there could be an incremental improvement in the risk that those mining residues pose to water quality. Questions to me, to the group? Shall I sit down and let others speak? Or?
Why don't you stand right there for a minute?
Okay.
Council, you have any questions for Dr. Arsht?
My first question is, you gave us a lot of information tonight. Is this information in a formal written report similar to an EIS that is publicly available?
I know it's not compiled in one spot. It's summarized in Snowbird's application, but aside from that, it's in a lot of bits and pieces, most of which have been submitted to the county. I think I haven't said anything that's not in the county's hands. I guess the responsibility of the effort to compile it into a report has not been requested.
Okay. Daniel, I think it has questions? Been requested. I heard that there has been a request made for any studies that have been done of the Snowbird, and they haven't been submitted by the American Fork, Protect and Preserve American Fork Canyon.
There's probably a question in there that Snowbird is better equipped to answer than I am. To my knowledge, everything that we've provided and compiled has gone through Snowbird and been submitted to Bryce Anderson.
To who?
And to Bryce, the county planner.
Okay.
And
Mr. Crawley, you have any more questions?
Yes.
Keep on going.
Sorry, go ahead. Okay. One criticism I would have of Snowbird in even utilizing you for the study is just like they have paid, you know, they paid $50,000 towards AFC Vision. They've paid our county commissioners, at least the affiliates of Snowbird have paid county commissioners for their campaigns, and several Salt Lake County politicians have had, you know, gifts and trips and things like that. There's been a lot of people that have received benefits from Snowbird in this entire process, and even you, I believe that you're being paid by them. So I'm just having a hard time seeing any outside independent voice weigh in on this from an environmental standpoint. I don't know if the EPA, I haven't heard it, the EPA has gotten involved and done studies in this area recently, but that's the concern I have, is that it seems like everywhere I look, Snowbird has put out money to those that are making this decision to help court them, mm-hmm. or help ease the process or grease the wheels. So how do you respond to that as far as
what you're doing? Well, I'd start at the bottom and let Bob take it from there. I think, as I said, my stock in trade is objective science to answer these questions, mm-hmm. and that comes at a price which they were willing to pay. But mm-hmm. Objective environmental review, we've done EISs for 20 years and done this kind of assessment, TMDL studies for the county and stuff. It's nobody's volunteering to do that.
Before you sit down, but just have a technical question. When you talk about the CFS coming out of Mineral Basin, does that include Mary Ellen Gulch of about 3 to 4 CFS on a seasonal basis?
That includes only the project area. We just roughly estimated the upper half of Mary Ellen Gulch.
And I don't know how the watersheds come together, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm familiar with Snowbird. I ski there, and I love Mineral Basin. But does Mary Ellen Gulch connect to the same watershed as Mineral Basin or not? That's what no one's better to answer that one to
me. It does. They're both tributaries. They're two tributaries to the North Fork of the American Fork.
Okay. And then once again, Mr. Bonner, too, you're talking about entirely on your private property. Is that correct? Okay, thank you.
I'd just like to add a little bit to your question. So part of the reason that we use people and companies like Cirrus Environmental is that's kind of the way that this, whether you like it or not, or whether I like it or not, that's kind of the way the system is set up. So for example, if we go to the Forest Service with a proposal to do something on Forest Service land, we work with the Forest Service to select a company to do the studies, and then we pay for it. So that's kind of how that works. I'd also like to say that part of our plan, as Mr. Art suggested, is to set up a monitoring program that I think goes for approximately 10 years pre- and post-construction. And we welcome the involvement of other agencies anywhere along the way in that, whether it's the State Department of Water Quality or the EPA. Thank you.
What? So another question that's been brought up is public access and prescriptive easements.
Thank you. That was my question.
Sorry, that was his question.
As well, answer it. I'm just wondering
what are your plans for that in order to address those concerns?
You know, I'm proud of Snowbird for we've owned a lot of that property back there for over 30 years, and during that time frame, we have made our property available for private use and for motorized use, and I think that we've committed to continue that use on county Class D roads.
Did I get that right? That's right.
Okay. On county Class D roads.
Does that include snowmobiling during the winter on those roads?
I think it applies to the historical uses on those Class D roads. You know, obviously, Councilman, you know, snowmobiling is a problem, a safety problem for us.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, so probably not snowmobiling.
Could you state your name, please?
Sure, Marty Banks. I've assisted Mr. Bonar and Snowbird in the...
Can you speak a little bit more closer into the mic?
Marty Banks. I've assisted Mr. Bonar and Snowbird in conjunction with the preparation and submittal of the conditional use permit that's in question here. And to the question that Councilman Zappala raises, We've surveyed the area, and it looks like there are four small areas where there's what's called, what the county calls a public Class D road, that are within the project area, four real small slivers. A couple of them are sufficiently close to future skiing operations that in the wintertime it may necessitate a seasonal closing, and that's not something that we can just do, but sufficiently close to the ski area where we may want to go to the county and ask for at least the ski season, that that limited area right near where, for example, snowmobile use would conflict with skier use, that area would be closed. But those areas where there aren't, those other areas where there aren't any of those kind of conflicts, we've made a commitment to the county to let the public continue to use those roads both summer and winter.
I have a question for Mr. Bonar. Mayor Gigi had been meeting with several groups for about 2 years when this had all kind of exploded last June or so. And in the July council meeting, he mentioned that he didn't know much about the Mountain Accord plans to swap property with the Forest Service. And I just find that really disingenuous for you to have, it appears that you had used him for 2 years. He set up meetings, he'd done so much to help your group, yet that came as such a surprise to him, too, when the land swap was announced. That seemed really ingenuous from Snowbird's perspective. How do you respond to that?
So, Bob, he's impugning me. Let me respond.
I'm actually asking Bob because you.
He can do it, but when you impugn me, I'm going to respond.
Okay.
And so, I've said many, many times, Mountain Accord is working on a land swap that none of us knew about.
Right.
Snowbird's been talking about expansion for a decade. So if your question is really, did I know about Snowbird's plans for expansion? The answer is yes. I think what you're really awkwardly trying to ask is, did I know that Mountain Accord was working on a land swap that involved about 416 acres in American Fork Canyon? And the answer is no.
I'm sure Bob knew, and he didn't tell you, though. That's why I'm saying it appears that you were helping him, but he wasn't really telling you his true intentions.
Councilman, you know, the Snowbird and me personally, I'm working on a land swap on both sides of the mountain, Little Cottonwood Canyon and American Fork Canyon, for a long, long time. Way before Mountain Accord, our land swap was part of Congressman Matheson's wilderness bill. And through that process, you know, there were public meetings, it was in the newspaper, there's, you know, there was all sorts of, you know, knowledge of it going on. So I just wanted to make that clear, that it's something that's been discussed for a long, long time, starting with Congressman Matheson's wilderness bill.
It just seemed to have caught him off guard based on our meeting in July. And I would assume if you guys spend a lot of time together, meetings even in this building, that he would have heard about that plan and been able to warn the rest of the residents that this is going to happen and you may not have access to the same areas you've had access to before for free. Anyway.
So again, Rob, what question are you asking? Are you asking about whether Snowbird had expansion plans that I was aware of that had been talked about for a decade? I said yes. But you seem to be confusing that with Mountain Accord working on a land swap that none of us knew about.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm complaining about to him, that none of us knew about that, yet he was meeting with you very often about these things. I'm just calling him on the carpet for not including you in those plans that none of us knew about. But obviously Bob did. It would have been nice if you knew about it. And if we as citizens knew about it before June, and it caught us all off guard, including Mayor Gigi, according to his statement in July last year. So anyway, I just don't see that that's a really open process if that was never discussed with Mayor Gigi, who was helping with the project with AFC Division, which was funded by you guys. Anyway, it's a complaint I have.
I've got a question for Dr. Aris. So up in American Fork Canyon, in the Snowbird properties that we're talking about, There's mines, there's tailings, there's whatever, what have you. If any of these are disturbed by any method, whether it is off-road vehicles, track hoes, an earthquake, mortar shells for avalanche control, is there the possibility of the water being adversely affected?
I guess a good scientist always says never say never, and that's certainly not the case there. The avalanche, the big shake that's slated for here, could shake an awful lot of stuff loose in these mountains. I think that most of those things that you mentioned are possible. Off-road, I mean, unregulated ATV use on mine tailings piles is definitely a risk in that watershed.
So it will risk the watershed?
Yeah, I think it's an incremental impact that if you loosen up material that carries heavy metals by recreating on it or shaking it or operating equipment on it, then it's loosened up to where overland flow and stuff puts it into the water supply.
Okay. See, that's where I've got an issue is with that water supply.
Well,
is even at the mouth of the American Fork Canyon, there's no, I mean, it's not no fishing. It says pregnant women and children shouldn't eat the fish. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that through the mining process over the years, and even in some less developed countries, and possibly even in our country, that we use mercury and arsenic and some of those other chemicals in order to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Process
the ore. It just makes it easier. Mm-hmm. What I'm worried about is more of that getting into the water for not just my generation, but for all of our children's generations and more to come. What safeguards are there to minimize, not just minimize, but to completely get rid of these pollutants that are up in the canyon that could, by some simple means, if not, you know, some big means, catastrophic means, mm-hmm. pollute the water?
Well, the bad news is I don't think there is a way. The worst water quality water sample, individual water sample that we've come across from Mary Ellen Gulch is in a naturally occurring what they call an iron bog that's up high enough in the basin where that westernmost tributary rises. It's the water source for it. And it's, you know, nature put a big body of mineralized rock close to the surface there, and mining exposes some of it, nature exposes some of it. You know, a big landslide up there over any of that material, mined or unmined, could have an adverse effect. My take home, I think, would be, in light of this project, and again, does this project exacerbate any existing condition, is that it regulates some things like recreational use up there. A stipulated mitigation measure in the application that would be a condition of approval of the CUP is that no deliberate activity, no construction activity, would either directly or indirectly affect the tailings piles. So, and then I think having more access in there, if something did go wrong, by natural causes or anything else, that having a little more presence up there and easier access to the site would simply put the wherewithal to deal with it much more readily at hand.
And with that access, that ease of access to the site, how easy is it to clean up the tailings?
There have been a couple estimates of the volume in those tailings. Then it's too late in the day for me to come up with one of them. It's a lot. In order to get them out of there, you'd have to build a 10-yard dump capable road all the way up there. And if you've been up there lately, it'd take some doing on that access road up Mary Ellen Gulch. Then you'd have to find a repository in the valley and haul them out. Through the process of excavating them, you're mobilizing all of the metals that are in them so that any rainfall event or runoff event that happened while you were in the process would scoot them right into the creek and into the water supply.
Okay.
And this is the bottom line is it's kind of a, I mean, there's no doubt that these tailings and others throughout the West are, in a sense, a ticking bomb. than a leftover holdover from our mining history. But the consensus of the experts now is most cases, if you're not washing them away or running equipment around on them, is leave them be.
Okay, so leave them be as in just stay away from them.
Yeah, I mean some of them are conditions where you can re-topsoil and re-vegetate them, and that way put a sort of a protective layer over them.
Okay. One other question I've got, and I don't know if it's for you or for Mr. Bonar, but currently, what's the usage up in Mary Island Gulch? Maybe a population per day, if it's 1,000 visitors or less, versus after this project, if it gets approved and put in, what will that area be seeing? Will we see an increase in use or a decrease in use?
Well, currently our use in Upper Mary Ellen Gulch is primarily for snowcat skiing. So from snowbird, it's not seeing a lot of use right now.
But you've got a lot of citizens that are, I don't know if they're trespassing, but they're utilizing that property.
Right, and mostly in the summertime.
Right.
And I would, I'm sure there are people in this room that probably know as much about that or more than I do. I would characterize it in the summertime as, maybe a few ATVs per day that get up there on our property.
And then, so we're at a few. And then after you develop it, what are we looking at?
So after we put a couple ski lifts in there, I would say it would probably be similar to what we've done in Mineral Basin, which, as long as I'm talking about Mineral Basin, I'd also like to point out that I think that our track record shows that if you look at the samples that, we built the ski lifts in Mineral Basin 18 years ago, and I think that, that's a project that's similar to Mary Ellen Gulch, where there's a lot of mine tailings and so forth back there. And I think if you looked at the water quality studies, it would show in American Fork Canyon that the two lifts that we put back there did not have a negative impact on water quality. But I would characterize the use in Mary Ellen Gulch, if we build two new lifts, to probably similar to the visitation or usage that we get in Mineral Basin, which I don't know, it's kind of hard to say. It could be 1,000 or 2,000 people that get back there at one time.
Okay. So just to recap, what Dr. Aris was mentioning.
It's Dr. Arts.
Arts. I apologize, Dr. Arts. That if we disturb these tailings or some of this property, we could further damage the water. And then I asked the question with usage, is it going to increase or decrease? And it sounds like it will dramatically increase. So how I'm looking at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if we have an increase in use, then we have an increase in the possibility of the water or the tailings contaminating the water.
If it were just a number of visitors that equated to that kind of damage and disturbance, that you'd be exactly right. I think the difference is that with the presence back there, it's more managed. So what are those additional people doing? And in this case, they're skiing over snow and having virtually no impact.
They're skiing, but there's also, avalanche control, and there's heavy equipment that goes on at ski resorts.
Yeah.
Maintenance, it is what it is. So okay,
they've
thank
got
you.
The stipulations to stay off of the mine stuff,
and okay,
they get that gets left alone. It's a better chance of being left alone than in an unmanaged current situation.
Okay,
I've got a question. One quick question about on that same line. So obviously, the Salt Lake City side of the ski resort, there are many mines as well over on that side, is that correct?
Oh yeah.
Are there more mines there than in Mineral Basin or?
Yeah, up around in the Alta area, Flagstaff, Toledo, up lopping over the mountain into Big Cottonwood Canyon.
Have those been negatively affected by the two ski resorts that share a Little Cottonwood Canyon? Or, I mean, is water quality? I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure there'd be good history to determine if there has been an effect on the water quality.
Over the course of ski area development since Alta started in the 40s, water quality in Little Cottonwood Canyon has improved. That said, the biggest improvement was putting a sewer system in, putting a sewer line in, but even in terms of metals and so forth, because the big sources were uncontrolled mine drainage. The biggest sources were uncontrolled drainage tunnels created for the purpose of draining mines and thus draining water into the watershed. But that canyon used to be a case of, when my dad was in forestry school, I won't take too long here, there was the case study in watershed improvement. It was, Little Cottonwood Canyon was a mess with no trees, red nasty metallic drainage out of all kinds of mine portals and so forth. Ski areas aren't responsible for totally fixing that situation, but it's a good clean watershed that meets Salt Lake standards now, and that's happened consistent concurrently with ski area development at two major resorts.
Thank you.
Mr. Geddes, do you have any more questions?
I think
I've got one for Mr. Boner, if I could.
I'm not going to stop you.
Okay, good.
And so what I was just going to say is, Council, I want to allow you great conversation and to not speak over one another. So if you're wanting to ask questions, can you raise your hand so I can recognize you so that you're not competing for time? I think Mr. Zappala was actually next, and then we'll go to you, Mr. Crawley. Is that all right? Jenny, are you wanting to speak too?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Daniel.
So I have a few questions for Mr. Bonar, if that's okay. And I'll try to cover things that you haven't heard already today. So my first question is regarding the zoning that was put in place to allow this use. And I'm wondering what kind of role Snowbird played in lobbying for that use or discussing those changes that were made to zoning with Utah County officials.
I'm not really sure that I understand your question.
So my understanding is that there was a zoning change that was made in past years.
And probably in 97 or 98 was the first one, yes.
Yeah, and then I think there were some subsequent modifications of that. And so I'm wondering what Snowbird's role was in discussing those changes with Utah County or lobbying for those kinds of changes.
You know, I'm not really sure that I'm prepared to answer that question right now.
Okay. This one is more recent then. With your recent submission for this conditional use permit, I read through the materials that you provided to Utah County. And one thing that caught my attention was the discussion of impact on viewshed. And there are some statements in that report that said something to the effect that, well, the only impacts to populated areas are to some distant areas, and the impact will be small. And as I was reading it, my reaction was, it doesn't sound like you're considering the impacts on the viewshed for recreational users of neighboring property. In other words, you've been very strongly stating, well, this is our property, it's private property, we should be able to develop this. But you've got neighboring properties that are publicly owned properties.
Now, can you tell me which ones you're referring to?
The Forest Service land that surrounds your property, that is adjacent to your property. And so you've got uses on those properties where the viewshed is impacted. It's not habited land. There's not cities up there, but there are properties up there where residents go to recreate. And part of the advantage, the allure of recreating that area, is that it's the solitude that you gain from not having development up there.
Councilman, I understand that ski lift towers, you know, do change the viewscape.
Okay. So my question for you is that when you're considering that impact on the viewscape, how do you balance the impact that those changes would have on neighboring properties as opposed to the obvious benefits that it would have for your property?
Councilman, I'm not sure it answers your question, but you know, I've been asked that before, and it's come up in discussions with the Forest Service, and we would continue to do as they have recommended to us, and that is, you know, let's just say it like it is. A ski lift tower is a ski lift tower, but there are things that you can do to have it blend better with the environment. That's been pointed out to us, or with the existing landscape, and those things have been pointed out to us in the past by other studies and by the Forest Service, and we would attempt to do the same thing on this project.
Okay.
Yep.
I might add, if it's helpful, Council Members Apollo, that the viewshed analysis that we undertook and attached to the application included not just distant residential properties, but an entire 10-mile radius from the proposed lifts, from 1 inch out all the way to 10 miles out.
Yeah, so I read that. But the statement in the report did not take into account impact on those neighboring properties. It only mentioned, well, there will be minimal impact on the the habited areas, on the boundaries.
Well, that certainly spoke to the...
And I could read it for you if you like.
Oh, I've read it about 500 times.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with it. It also addresses the immediate and everything out impacts from 1 inch to 10 miles. It shows the visuals of whose properties are impacted, including Forest Service property and all the residential neighbors. All of the neighbors have been notified of the impact.
Sure, sure. But a good environmental impact statement is willing to look at impacts that are negative impacts and acknowledge them, and acknowledge in some cases they can't be mitigated. As I believe in this case, they may not necessarily be able to be mitigated. A ski tower is a ski tower. But it's forthright. It's forthcoming with those negative impacts and saying, yes, there will be some negative impacts, rather than, in my opinion, the report just kind of swept them under the rug and said, well, there's minimal or no impacts in the area. And I think there are some significant impacts to the neighboring properties.
Well, I think there will be, too, and those are shown on the maps in different colors to reflect not just the existence, but the degree of impact.
Right. Okay.
And if I might just add, as my shop did the visual impact as well, a basic tenet of the Forest Service and anybody else's visual impact assessment, which we've done many of in SCARA EISs, is the number of people that would be affected. You have to have, it's sort of like the tree falls in the forest kind of an idea, that the visual sensitivity is dependent in large measure of how many people would see it and be affected by it. And for that reason, that discussion says we've got one campground, I forget which one it is, but high in the North Fork Basin, no heavily used roads. I mean, it parses the impact out to where there's somebody there to see it, which is consistent with the scenic resource management guide that the Forest Service publishes and the landscape architecture guidelines for assessing.
Yeah, and I would maintain that that can't be captured by looking at campgrounds, but it's captured by looking at use and how many people are actually up there on a regular basis to enjoy those views.
That's certainly a valid viewpoint on it.
Yeah. Mr. Bonar, can I ask you one more question, please? So we've heard a bit about the American Fork Canyon vision process, and I've never yet had an opportunity to ask you, so I want to take this opportunity to ask you what your opinion was of that process. How well was it working? You know, was it working as well as, say, a Mountain Accord process where multiple parties with sometimes conflicting interests were brought to the table and were trying to balance issues? What was your opinion of how that process was working and Snowbird's role in that process?
Councilman, I am supportive of processes like the Mountain Accord process and like the American Fork Vision process. I think that a lot of the reason that I wanted to get involved in both, and specifically the American Fork part, is because, you know, there's a lot of user groups in American Fork Canyon, and every year there's more and more people using public property for service land and our private property up there. And I think I've always been supportive of taking a look at that and seeing if there's better management plan.
So have you, since that process was dissolved, have you approached Utah County to restart a planning process so that we can really look long term and help figure out where the canyon goes?
Councilman, we would be happy to participate in that study, but I don't think that I'll be suggesting at this time.
Okay. I'll ask you a question, which I think I know the answer to, but I want to ask it anyway. Have you considered withdrawing your proposal for conditional use permit and going to the county and saying maybe we should sit down together and figure this out?
And what do you mean by figure
start
it out?
Start a public, transparent planning process in the canyon again.
No, we're happy to participate Mountain Accord style or American Fork, you know, vision process, but we're not going to withdraw our application that we currently have before the county.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Daniel, do you mind if before I give it to Mr. Crowley, do you mind if I add something to that? Because I was very involved with the American Fork Canyon vision.
Oh, go right ahead.
So let me quote Carl Fisher of Save Our Canyons, a friend of mine who was very involved. He has a very different idea than Snowbird. And his quote that I think was widely said is that American Fork Canyon vision was the solution. It was not the problem. That's why Protect and Preserve wants to create a new committee made up of essentially the same type of people to do the very same thing. Because it is the solution to bring all kinds of stakeholders together with disparate ideas and try and find some common ground.
I think the residents would be very happy to have a public process like the Mountain Accord style process.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was always our intent. Mr. Crawley, you're next.
Yes. This is for Bob Bonar. So we've talked about, you know, how we don't know exactly what could happen. You know, we sometimes don't even know where some mine shafts may be. You know, there may be some abandoned mines and whatnot. There is liability going in there. Does Snowbird take full responsibility for the liability should one of these mines fail, like the Yankee mine? So suppose something like what happened in Colorado happened here. Would Snowbird take full responsibility for that?
Councilman, I've been asked that question before, and I'd like to have our attorney, Marty Banks, come up. He has the best knowledge on that, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
And Mayor and council members, if it's okay with you, I would like to end our question period tonight. Like a lot of you, I started working at really early this morning, and I would like to call it quits for tonight, but I would also like to invite you, if you have more questions, we're happy to put our team together and make ourselves available at Snowbird sometime if you'd like to have another question and answer session.
Great. So let me just, Mr. Crawley had a question. I want to allow him. Yeah. And then Jenny Reese, I think, had a question. And then okay. If the council is okay, then we're done.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
The short answer, Council Member Crawley, is that in the context of an historic mine, like, for example, the Yankee mine, that has been in existence for a long time and has been under the ownership of several different entities over a long period of time, the likely scenario, if there were some kind of hypothetical catastrophic event, would be that the Utah State Department of Environmental Quality, most likely, perhaps with some EPO oversight, would come in and they would go through the typical process in this kind of scenario where they would pull out old land records, identify, well, they do two things. First, they would find out, make a best shot at determining what was the cause of the incident or the failure or whatever it might be. And if they could put their thumb on a particular actor who caused the problem, then that actor, whether it was some mischievous 18-year-olds doing what they might do in a mine shaft or who knows what, or whether it was an ATV operator or a ski operator or a recreationist, whatever it might be, that person certainly would be on the list of potentially responsible parties. Going beyond the sort of actors, if you will, they would also put together a list of entities or individuals that had owned the property over the course of history from its inception until the present. And depending on the involvement of those particular owners, some of those may well be on that list of potentially responsible parties as well. And then the DEQ would assess respective roles, respective durations of ownership, respective responsibilities in terms of digging, gapping, monitoring, etc., and ultimately hash out some kind of allocation arrangement whereby responsibility amongst the collection of responsible parties would be determined. That may be a little longer than you asked for, but that's the short version.
I'll take that as a maybe then.
Well, no, it's not a maybe. I can elaborate if you like. Did that not answer your question?
I just said, would Snowbird take full responsibility if there was some catastrophe that happened up there?
Well, no entity in its right mind would take full responsibility if someone else's actions were at cause.
That's why I said maybe.
So it would be a function of respective roles.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mrs. Reese.
I'll try to make mine fast. Was it Snowbird's intent? I know you were part of the AFC vision process. Was it Snowbird's intent to request a conditional use permit for those ski lifts before that process was complete? Or were you going to originally wait until that process was complete?
That's a complicated answer. But, we wanted to go through the Mountain Accord and the associated land swap before we proceeded with our plan to put lifts back there.
So just to kind of piggyback on Councilmember Zapala's original question, which is if the county and stakeholders can form another group similar to Mountain Accord, that still wouldn't convince Snowbird to, if you were going to wait originally for that process to be completed, you wouldn't consider doing so this time around?
No.
My other question is, there have been lots of concerns. I'm sure you've heard many of them over the last several months. If there are studies such as the water studies that were provided to Snowbird that haven't been released to the public, what's the harm in releasing those so that way the public can read them and have any additional questions they have answered?
All of the studies that Mr. Arts referenced that he was familiar with, those have all been provided to the county, and those are accessible to anybody who cares to go and make a copy of them and read them.
It's not just a summary, it's the core data behind the summary?
Well, the entire underlying studies are there and available, yeah.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. How about if we take a five-minute break? Give you guys an opportunity to stretch your legs, visit the restroom if you need to. We'll be back in 5 minutes. We are ready to start up again. Courtney, just give me a thumbs up when you're ready. Okay, we're going. So here's my recommendation, Council. We spent quite a bit of time in work session talking about zoning ordinances and all that we're working on there. I would suggest, even though we have that on our agenda every single time, we've spent a lot of time talking about that today and over the weekend at our budget planning session. So I would suggest we table that till our next meeting and proceed with item number 8, which is an action item on amendments for the FY16 budget. Mr. Lowe, time is yours.
Do you want me to amend the agenda real quick?
Please do.
Or you can just table it.
That's what I'm saying. I move that we table item number 10.
Is there a second?
I second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Mr. Lowe, time is yours.
Okay, we have a few adjustments I'm proposing. And the first one is for utilization of the paper newsletter processing. We still have a lot of residents still like paper newsletters, so we're going to need to increase the amount allocated to process those and for the postage and the offsetting revenue. And that's the first adjustment.
Real quick, Charles, is that $1.35 is covering that cost, though?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It's a legal services adjustment. You have the breakdown on an estimate. I haven't, you know, David Shaw was here. He could maybe help a little with that. But for now, it's we've had a lot more legal advertising this year. Last year, we didn't get close to the budget, so I've increased that by $2,000. We've already spent our legal advertising budget. Legal services, litigation contingency, $70,500. Legal services retainer fee for the next 5 months, $29,500. And then legal services for ETJ Law Golf Finance, $59,45. And that would be offset. You have to add up all the general fund items. It's offset partly by fund balance and partly by our building permits. We've already exceeded the revenue that we have budgeted for the year in building permits, mostly during due to solar. And so we're increasing the contract labor on that, but Jeff's been handling a lot of the building permits, and so depending on how much he handles, depends, makes our contract labor fluctuate. So the only other adjustment is for election expenses. Needed to increase that a couple of thousand, which is being offset by the building permit revenues. Are there any questions with the general fund adjustments?
So, did you ever talk to Eric about his bill? I thought we were discussing with him about an adjustment.
Yeah. So, he sent a detailed, what looks to be a more detailed invoice. Did you get that, Mr. Bunker?
We have not received anything from regarding that.
Okay. I just have the original one that had. There was two pages.
That one's attached.
That's in our packet.
Yeah, we've got that one.
So that's the only one I've seen.
And so he sent an email. I think it was today. Let me see if I can. And so he made very minor adjustments to it. It still seems high in my opinion. So if you want to carve that out and have more discussions with him, I'm not opposed to that. I am in favor of paying people who do work for the city. But that's my only thought on that is.
I'd agree to move forward carving that out.
Me too.
Me too.
Okay.
For capital projects, this is an old transaction that happened in October, the bond refinance. You don't have two lines on the bottom that are just using cash. So I think you have the first three lines, other financing use, which is the payment to the escrow agent, and then the bond issuance costs. That's the only actual expense. So an other financing use isn't considered an expense. It's and other financing source, it's close to a revenue, but it's not considered a revenue. That's the new bonds that were issued. And then the other two items are assets, so we don't budget adjust for assets. So that's why they're not on there for you. Are there any questions about that?
Remind me, the election expense, that was because of the recount that was required, that was requested?
I believe that definitely helped, was the additional recount for the primary. We had to pay for that.
I just have a question about elections, because those would have to be outside expenses, because just because it takes more time for our internal staff to do something, we don't have to recognize that as an expense, correct?
Oh, no, we hire people.
Okay, so this was outside sources.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do we have someone that would like to propose budget adjustments?
I will, just because I know you want to go home.
Thanks.
I move that we adopt resolution number 2-2-2016A, a resolution adopting the amended 2015-2016 fiscal year budget for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah, with the one change that we're going to carve out Mr. Johnson's invoice until we come to an agreement on that.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
I think give Mr. it to Mike. Crawley got that, was that Mr.
Me?
I heard it from my right side, so that was Mr. Geddes. Is there any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Ladies
and gentlemen. Can I suggest we invest in those little buzzers on game shows, you know?
What's that?
First one to buzz in.
Okay. So,
I move that we adjourn this meeting.
Second.
Boy, that was quick. Motion, seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're done. Thank you very much.
Sweet.